the number of homeless people in South Dakota is about the same as last year. That's according to the South Dakota Housing for the Homeless Consortium's point-in-time homeless count conducted in September. The count was done in collaboration with community agencies and homeless service providers in 52 of the state's counties. The total number was 1,155 individuals. That's a slight reduction from last year's count of 1,166. 40% were men, 32% were women, 28% children. In Sioux Falls, however, numbers went up from 2012. Last year's survey reported 435 homeless people. This year's count was 618, including 218 children. Stacy Teason is coordinator for the Minnehaha County Homeless Advisory Board, and she joins the program. Stacy, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you.
Well, first, how is homelessness defined in this survey?
Well, we have to go by the federal regulations. So basically, the definition comes down to a permanent nighttime residence. So anyone who is living outside, living in shelters, living living in motels, if they're paying for them themselves, though, they don't consider that, which is an odd thing for us because we have many families that live in motels. But just simply because of an affordable housing issue. But it's basically that simple, lacking a permanent place to sleep at night.
And how was the September survey conducted in Minnehaha County?
We kind of go all in because we know we have probably the biggest number of homeless in our city simply because we're the largest, just statistically. But we start off at about 3 a.m. with a group of volunteers at Labor Ready. And we're not saying that all the people that go to Labor Ready are homeless, but we learned a couple years ago that that's a significant number of the people that are going there looking for work, doing some temp jobs. So we start at 3 in the morning at Labor Ready and try to get people to talk to us and explain a little bit about their situations. And that just really is an eye-opening experience in and of itself because people that are waiting in line to go for a job sometimes get sent out on 12-hour shifts in Howard, South Dakota, for example. So then they're basically putting in a 15-hour day and making minimum wage for only the hours that they're working. And then they're coming home and sleeping in their car, which is their home. But for us, we do all day. So I have all of the service providers in the community that may come into contact with homeless individuals working on the surveys. And then I have probably about 50 to 60 volunteers over the course of the day that go out with me to places like the Good Shepherd Center, the Union Gospel Mission, the St. Francis House, the banquet, and then we have police officers that go with us, so we go out into the parks, into the community, where we know that sometimes they're sleeping outside, and we try to get them to do the surveys with us, and then we finish up our night at detox with anyone that we might know that's homeless and ended up in the detoxification center. So basically from 3 a.m. to 10 p.m., me and a group of volunteers are out trying to get people to do surveys with us.
Is it, do you find it difficult to talk with people, or do you find that a lot of them are willing to talk with you and share what, in some cases, I would say, very, very personal information?
It's very personal. It's very hard. It's very hard for the volunteers to feel comfortable to ask the questions. So we know from experience, this is probably my 10th year of trying to do these just from a different perspective, but if we have incentives, if we have a way to get people to want to talk to us, we get a better response. So luckily this year we had a donor that had some money, so we were able to buy $5 gift certificates to McDonald's and Burger King, so we kind of had a way to entice them to talk to us. But once they start talking, they really do enjoy sharing their story, and it's terribly personal. So we have 14 questions on our survey, and we basically start with, where'd you sleep last night? So right from the get-go, we're putting you kind of on the spot that you're admitting that you're homeless and that maybe you were outside or you were living in a domestic violence shelter or something that's very personal. And then the next question is, of course, well, how'd you get that way? Of course, it's framed nicer, but basically we're saying, well, so what was the situation that got you here? So if it's a divorce, if it's a loss of a spouse, if it was a loss of a job, perhaps it is substance abuse. For some, it's mental illness. And then it just kind of goes down asking statistical questions about what kind of resources do you have. So do you get food stamps? Do you not? If not, why not? And then what do you think are the biggest needs that you have right now? And so if they say shelter, if they say housing or whatever might pop up for them as immediate needs, and then basically we finish up with, is there anything that I can do for you right now? Because they're confidential surveys, so people don't have to share their information other than birth date and some other identifiers, so we know that we don't have duplicate responses. but it's entirely up to the person how much they want to share with us.
Now, this is, as you mentioned, you start at 3 a.m., go till 10 p.m., and this is one day in September for this survey.
Yep.
How accurate does that give you in portraying a picture, getting the numbers, and getting an idea of what the homeless situation is like in Sioux Falls and in Minnehaha County?
It really is hard to say simply because it's a one day, so it's only as good as my volunteers are at asking questions and approaching people. It's only as good as the people who know that it's happening that day and then stay away from agencies they maybe normally would go to. And then really it is just reflective of what people encountered that day. So you don't have to do the survey with me. It's entirely your option. So if we're like at the Good Shepherd Center and people decline to do it, then I really can't. I'm not going to force them to do it. So because we've been doing this long enough, I would say that the data is pretty solid, and the number we're pretty consistent with saying between 600 and 800 people in the Minnehaha County area. But ultimately, people that are living doubled up, which I would consider being homeless, so people who are living with friends and family out of economic necessity, aren't allowed to be counted in this. So that's a whole other population that we don't figure into the math. We have lots of families that are living two and three families to a two-bedroom apartment, but we can't count those. And we also have families that are paying 80, 90% of what they have for income on their rent. We would call that inadequately housed or at risk of becoming homeless at any moment, but we aren't allowed to count them as homeless either because they have a roof over their head.
So, Stacey Teason, you're saying that from your perspective, given that these other numbers, other people that aren't included in the survey, that the problem of homelessness is bigger than these numbers suggest?
Yes. Yes, I would say so. And I mean, sometimes it just comes down to the fact that we don't have enough affordable housing. We have plenty of people that are working and yet still homeless. I mean, just looking at this survey from this year, 27% were working full-time, an additional 22% were working at least part-time. So people are earning their wages. They just simply can't afford a place. There isn't a place in Sioux Falls. There isn't a place in Rapid. There isn't a place in Mitchell that based on the wages that they're currently earning that they can afford a place to live.
The numbers, as you mentioned, September 2012, 435, this year, 618. Why do you think that the numbers have gone up this year?
I think we're seeing a lot of stressors. I think there's a lot of people who are working multiple jobs, but they still can't afford it. We have families that are at motels, and again, we can't really count those if they're self-pay, but if an agency like the County Human Services Office is paying for them, then they can be counted, I think. Basically, because our economy is really great. I mean, we have wonderful economic outlooks here, so it's really hard to say that the numbers are up. So part of it, I think, is we did a great job of getting people to do the surveys. I mean, I had wonderful volunteers this time that had some prior experience and just some gung-ho-ness about them, so they were really willing to, you know, get told no and keep going, so that was nice. But ultimately, I think it's kind of just an overall signal of what's going on. We have a housing shortage for people who are earning minimum wage and under. The statistics right now are telling us that a two-bedroom in Sioux Falls is running about $760 a month. If you are earning $725 or even $8 an hour, you can basically afford about $300, $350 a month. We don't have those types of apartments or units available in the city for people to be able to afford those.
There were 218 homeless children in the Minnehaha County survey. How does homelessness affect children differently from adults? And how do you deal with that?
It's for children. I mean, it's very stressful for parents. It's even more so for kids because they have no ability to determine what's going on. They have no control over the situation. So especially this time of year, if a family ends up homeless, I like to look at it from a significant loss. Not only are they losing their home, but maybe they just got their Christmas presents. Maybe they just got a new puppy for Christmas. And then in January, because mom couldn't pay November or December rent, the landlord says, I'm sorry, I can't carry you any longer. You need to go. So kids lose everything, and they just got it. Maybe they were just feeling like they finally fit back in. They got to go back to school, and they had the latest clothes. They had the latest stuff, and so they really felt like they belonged, and now it's gone again. So significant loss. We always look at it as a traumatic experience for kids. There's a study out there, and I can't quote my source, but it talks about how for children, especially under the age of five, It's actually almost as traumatic as a stroke. That's the level of brain damage that it does if it's a continuous homeless situation. So you think about that from an education perspective and how challenging it is for a kid, even a kid in poverty, when they start schools and they start kindergarten. Statistics say that they average about 3,000 to 5,000 words, and someone who is more perhaps a middle-class family, they're going to school with 10,000 words in their vocabulary. So just even the ability to communicate is much more challenging. And we talk about education in general, statistics again say between 3 and 6 months of education is lost every time a kid becomes homeless. So we have kids in our community that are homeless 3 and 4 times a year, not because of anything that they're doing, but simply because the situation is what it is and they can't stay housed with the family. So you talk about maybe third grade. If you've moved 3 times, it's like third grade never happened to you.
What happens with these numbers now that statewide the Homeless Consortium has them, and in Minnehaha County the Homeless Advisory Board? What is done with these numbers once you collect them?
We use these to make our plan. So, like for us, the 2014 season's upon us, so we're putting together what we want to tackle for issues in our community. So with these numbers, then we say, wow, affordable housing keeps coming up. What do we need to do? How do we respond? How do we put some heat on the city council, the county commissioners, even perhaps all the way up to the governor's office? How do we say, what is it that you can do to help with homelessness in the state of South Dakota? And so as a consortium, from a statewide perspective, all of us have to work together. You have 66 counties who all have different levels of homelessness in them. Rapid City's got 304 people that were identified as homeless, so about half of what we have, but they have a significant homeless problem because they have just as bad, if not worse, affordable housing issues than we do. So we just kind of put our teeth into this. We're working on a statewide 10-year plan as well through the consortium that will hopefully identify these key pieces. And then as we have dollars come in from the federal government and the city councilors and county commissioners look at what kind of programs need to be put together, hopefully they'll look at what we say as informative and directional, so they know that this is what we should do. And I would put affordable housing and transportation as two of the top, and then some workforce development. So, I mean, we have people who are earning $8 an hour but maybe have the ability, if they had training, to be able to make $12 or $13 an hour. So,
This survey was in September. We're now in December. January's coming up here. Mm-hmm. For the, obviously weather makes a big difference, but I'm wondering, in general, the challenges that face the homelessness as in these winter months as opposed to, say, September.
Oh, yeah, it's much, much different, because when you could freeze at any time, it's hard to be homeless in the wintertime. So September, you can be outside no problem. I mean, it's not a decent option, but you can be outside and not worry about freezing to death. January, February, it's a lot different. So we know, based on our statistics, that we have a pretty big number of people that have been outdoors. So we thankfully have the warming site at the Salvation Army that can just open its doors from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. So just any adult can go there. It's not designed for kids. It's designed for singles. But, so they have occupancy between 60 and 70 a night once they're in full swing, because people give up and they can't be outside. So they come where they know they can be warm and they're not judged. So that's one of the things we've looked at here. I know Rapid City was looking at trying to do the same thing there because they have a significant need as well. But across the state, it's really hard because the communities are so small and they rely on their churches to maybe provide for hotel stays, or maybe do a little bit like with using the church facility for people to be able to stay. But they're really not equipped. And across the state, we have a lot more domestic violence shelters than we do just plain old homeless shelters. So then that's a bit of an issue, too, because if they're serving victims of domestic violence, which is typically women, if you're a single guy and you're homeless, you're not going to get served at the one and only shelter in your community.
What are, I mean, this is probably an impossible question to answer, but are there answers to homelessness?
Sure. And it's all about working together. The easiest one is just to say, okay, well, we need to say, because you could say, give us more money, but that's not going to be the solution, because more money isn't necessarily a solution. I'm not going to turn it down. I'd take that Mega Millions any day and try and put that out there. But we have to work with people where they're at. So if someone is suffering from mental health issues and they're not on their medications, if someone has a substance abuse issue and they're interested in getting help, if there's a family that can't afford rent and they have little kids, how do we get them to the next best place? And so part of that will be expanding our homeless services so that we're meeting all the needs of the community. We don't have a cooling site in the wintertime, so when it's 110 out and people are outside, that's almost as bad as it being minus 10, because if you're not on your medication and you don't have access to water, you could become dehydrated and end up in the emergency room just as easily as if you had frostbite. So it's really just getting the faith-based community together and saying, how can we collaborate and work more effectively together? How do we get nonprofits all on the same page? Because money's tight and there isn't enough to go around, but if everyone works together and says our priorities for the community are families, our priorities are those that are chronically homeless because they're the most expensive, then we have a plan and we can kind of all say based on, you know, when agencies are making their budgets or the city council's making its budget or the county's making its budget, they can say the programs that they do provide dollars for, they can say what's most effective, and we can go from there.
When is the next survey? Is there one coming up in January?
We have to actually start doing them in January because that's tricky based on what we just were talking about. So September's easy. I can get volunteers. If it's raining, the count obviously would reflect lower numbers. But when it's bitterly cold, that will be a challenge to get people to be excited to volunteer, but I'm going to ask anyway. So January 28th, and we usually do it in two-hour blocks so people don't have to commit all day, but volunteers are needed. And then trying to go out into the woods and the parks like we do in September, we won't do that. Or if we do do it, it will be because we know for sure somebody might be out there. Otherwise, though, it's a bit more challenging.